here, so FYI. All right.
I'm adjusting, but they can see me do that.
I got Old Town Road out of my head, and then at work, I don't need that. Why is that doing that?
Do you have Christmas lights up, Chris?
I do, yes.
I have them all over my ceiling right now.
Above you?
See, I actually have a really nice background and stuff, but none of this is set up like that. I do have Kermit the Frog and a really creepy Charlie Chaplin.
What?
In case we need that. And a lot of books.
Okay. I probably should have checked in with Harry better. I hope that he's not mad at me.
Why would he be mad at you?
Because I threw it in the... And I normally, like, I just have had such a busy day that, like, I didn't do what I normally do, which is like, hey, by the way, because Harry refuses to join the chat and use Facebook, which I
noticed that.
I understand. Mm-hmm. I get. But it means that I have another way that I have to communicate with one co-host. But he's Harry, so we allow it.
Well, I'm going to be honest about this topic. I know generalities and I did a little research, but I detest like the ins and outs of the impeachment process and all that. It's just...
This isn't impeachment. This is FISA
violations. Well, it's the FISA. Yeah. I know. Yeah. But still, that's what it lends itself towards.
That's okay. You can play the voice of the listener and ask questions. I'm going to be real honest. Okay. I don't know a ton about it either. That's why we have the great notes from Sam. So, because I... know what he told us, and we'll kind of read through it, but I'm not real strong on this either, so...
Okay.
This is, you know, I'm going to just, for our patrons, there's some shows that you do, because, like, we got to do a show this week. I don't know much about it, but we're going to get this show done. And those usually end up being the best shows. At the end of the show, you're like, that was a pretty good episode, but going into...
No, that was good. Like, when you mentioned, just get up and say, I have to podcast today, that's what I've been avoiding, and there's a lot of things that I want to talk about. I just need to just do
fucking
it.
Fucking slacking.
Mm-hmm. I moved. I had to go back to college. I had to go to community college.
What? Why?
It was horrible. Because I get to go get licensed by the state.
Doing what again? Insurance?
I'm licensed to sell property, casualty, accident, life, and health insurance now. And it only took part of my soul. Do you know how hard that is for me to sit in class and then go take a proctored test?
Uh-huh.
That's not my strong suit. And then the whole time, like in the life and health portion, what was horrible is they talked about Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security as if they were actually insurance.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, we all just actually have to test on what insurance actually is and understand the ins and outs of it. So this obviously isn't insurance because it's not pooling risk.
Right.
It's not insurance. It's the opposite. But they sold it like that. And then everybody talked about how ridiculous these regulations were and nobody could get this insurance. And then in the same token, they were talking about because there's no money in it because too many people take advantage of it. And I'm like, well, that's not insurance. That's socialism. Right. Insurance is a good thing. You know, it would happen in a voluntary society. And it's it goes way back to Rome. You know, people would pool risk because there was widows and things like that. And it's not a bad thing, but the government being involved in it is forcing people to be involved in that pool.
Right.
So it's not insurance anymore. It's just a government program.
Whee!
So that was fun. So I sat there in class.
How much are you pissing off everybody you know because you keep trying to sell them insurance?
It's really bad. Pretty much the Ohio LP probably has sent out messages ahead of time instead of me. I'm like, hey, I know you're running for this and that. I'm trying to build a network in Ohio.
Oh, my gosh.
Some people were gracious, actually. It's difficult because nobody thinks about insurance. It's not a sexy thing to sell. So, but if you live in Ohio, people...
Hit her up.
I also sell banking products too, so I can get you a loan or credit card or whatever. So I won't shout out what company I work for, but if you message me on the old Facebook,
Primerica.
I can give you a quote and help you out.
Looking for an annuity.
Are you?
If there's a way to turn you up, Reinhold, please do.
Turn me up. Okay.
Yep.
Reinhold, do you have a structured settlement, but you need cash now?
What would I do in that case? I just don't know what I can do about it.
Actually, at one time I thought annuities were silly, but there is a market for them, for sure.
I'm going to be the first of many of your friends, Trish, to say that if you keep talking about insurance, I'm going to kill myself. Shut up.
Of course, I want to kill myself every day for 8 hours a day. But Liberty doesn't pay the bills, as you know. And we don't all get to work our dream jobs.
I know. It's pretty great.
You know, that's
I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard having a wonderful job you love and a great girlfriend and a successful career. It's really very
money
tiring.
And cats. It's hard.
Yes. I have 4 cats now.
Not surprised.
Yes.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, that's better.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right.
This meeting is being recorded.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle here on the We Are Libertarians Network with a new, freshly designed website. I'll tell you all the ways that I'm a glutton for punishment after we get back. We're going to talk about the Inspector General's report. Maybe just give our initial thoughts on impeachment. But we won't dwell on that. We've done so many shows on that, and I can't take it anymore. So we'll be right back after this.
Warning. This show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. It is so nice to be with you this week, the week before Christmas. We won't have a show next week. It's Christmas week, and I come from a broken home, and so I have like 7 Christmases to go to, and I'm busy next week, but I know you are too, so you probably won't miss us. All right, stop that. That's enough of that. There's more professional ways to fade that down, but I'm punchy. I'll explain why in a moment, but let me explain who's here. Harry is not here. That is probably my fault. I hope he doesn't quit. We were going to do this Tuesday, and I got a horrible stomach flu, and I slept through the time we would have been podcasting. And so I was like, hey, can we reschedule to Thursday? And I said it in the Facebook group. But Harry refuses to use that. He only uses Discord. So I have like 20 hosts in one chat, and I can tag people. And then I have to go to Discord, a completely separate website, to message Harry. I also sent out Christmas cards to our patrons and some of our former patrons. And Harry refused to give me his address. So I don't know if Harry's quitting or what, but hopefully Harry's not mad at me that we're doing this episode and he didn't know about it. But I hope he joined. Harry, if you're watching on Dear Leader's Court, then please jump in if you'd like. That laugh that you hear in the background is the lovely Tricia Stewart, host of Gingerarchy here on with the We Are Libertarians Network. Tricia, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you, Chris?
I am great. And then also is the John C. Dvorak of We Are Libertarians. Reinhold is lurking in the background. Reinhold, how are you?
I'm doing well. Last but always least.
Would you like to yell at the listeners for a newsletter, or you have a train that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, well, look, if you're going to, you know, open a newsletter, send in the donations, right?
Yeah, that done.
We're not going to be on the air anymore.
That is actually true. If you guys don't contribute to Patreon, then we won't exist anymore. So, but we don't have like a cool 33-33 type thing like the Great No Agenda podcast, which I got turned on to by Reinhold, but he can't stand it because he has Trump derangement syndrome and they don't. So
They have the other version.
Yeah, they have the other version of Trump derangement syndrome where they're.
So you're openly admitting you have the opposite version of it, Dennis. Is that what you're saying?
I disdain all politicians for the most part. So Trump is just the worst of the politicians that I've seen recently. Although there are some making the list as well.
I'm going to say, let me interrupt. Reinhold, you look almost handsome. I don't know what is going on with the light.
He looks tan. He looks very tan.
Dennis, you look Trey Doable.
The ring light that I got. So hopefully this new lighting actually shows off my handsome features.
Yeah, you look tan. You look young good.
Enough. Well, I did go to the doctor a week ago and found some issues.
All right.
And I feel better.
See, that's the kind of friend I am. You're like, I went to the doctor, they found some issues, and I went, you're dying.
You get old, things happen. So right. I have a few pills to take every day now, but I feel better. So
that's good. That's good. 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 Take care of your health. We need you around. We need you to keep annoying. See, it's funny because I consider on We Are Libertarians Trisha to be like our outreach to the Mises Caucus people. And I consider Reinhold to be the thing that keeps the Mises Caucus people from liking us. So, well played, me.
I think I'm the one who keeps everyone from liking us, though. So you have to be careful there.
I think that's me. I am annoying, and I am a shit poster. And so it's like, man, Nick Sarwark's taking a lot of shit right now. I better retweet him just to piss people off. I don't know why I do it.
You have to.
Well, yeah, on Twitter, somebody asked what annoy libertarians in a single sentence, and I just retweeted it and wrote, Murray Rothbard is an asshole, and it got no likes.
There you go. So, there you go.
Necessarily not true.
No, he was an asshole. I mean, he was a brilliant man.
Oh, my God.
Listen, Trisha.
He was not an asshole.
No, he was.
Shut your damn mouth, Christopher.
He was an asshole. It doesn't mean that he wasn't a brilliant intellectual who had a lot of great things to say.
He wasn't a cruel person.
Neither is Reinhold, but he's an asshole.
Okay, then we can talk about Ayn Rand.
She was a
Yeah, I love her.
Right. I think brilliant people like those folks, they really like interpersonal relationships are just harder for people who have the amount of like brain power that Murray and Ayn had. I just think that they struggle more with interpersonal relationships than a lot of other people. Doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just, you know, you look back at, I'm not saying that his work is, I've committed the unpardonable sin, which is saying something bad about Murray Rothbard, libertarian Jesus, but that was the point of the tweet, was to annoy libertarians.
I don't agree with Rothbard and everything. I've learned quite a bit from him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't agree with them on every point. And when someone says, well, Murray said this, well, that doesn't mean anything to me. It means I should look at it, but it doesn't mean it's exactly correct.
Is it?
Murray said a lot of things that he sometimes was against his own statements on.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he grew too. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
You can't write the prolific amount of information that Murray Rothbard wrote over the span of your lifetime and not come to different conclusions at certain points. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that's impossible. You listen to this dumb podcast and I've changed my mind 1,700 times.
I have too. Yeah.
Ow!
If you look back at my writing, I was actually, one of my earlier writings was...
Get out of here.
Bending the case for going into Iraq, so...
wait, what? Back that train up, Dennis. Wait. Are you dead serious?
Yeah. So my rationale for supporting that was, I was on the fence, but my rationale had nothing to do with the WMDs. It was a whole different thing. It was a promise we made to the Kurds, but that's, you know.
Well, we fucked them thing. Six ways from Sunday.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So many times, so horribly. Yeah. And I was like, we owe them, you know, at least this to get that guy out of office.
They need to stop listening to us. I mean, honestly.
What was the Kissinger quote?
Pull that 46 times. Shame on them.
We had a quote by Kissinger about the Kurds. It's like, if you want to tell a joke in the Middle East, promise something to the Kurds. I think it was something like I'm paraphrasing. I'm sorry I yelled, but my cat scratched the hell out of me.
Aw, did you need a Band-Aid, Christopher?
I honestly do, and then I locked her in the room. Thank you, too, for covering. Like, oh, that hurt so bad. This is the least professional.
Well, we were talking
podcast about
the Kurds in Iraq, that how basically a lot of those people thought that we were covering their asses and they got murdered, but I'm really sorry about your finger.
Thank you. Fuck you, Trisha. Well played.
They had some gas that let them go to sleep.
Right. Yes. Yeah. They had a peaceful good night.
Yes. Where Chris is still suffering.
We Are Libertarians has finally been labeled fake news. just wanted to bring this
officially. Officially by Facebook.
Right? Yeah, Instagram. So
that's official.
Instagram. Okay.
Our buddy Stone.
They're the same thing.
Yeah, but our buddy Stone posted a meme about Epstein, and it was labeled as fake news. It now has a cover over it before you can see the meme, and it says it was posted today, December 19th, 2019. So if you're listening far in the future, false. It has a covering, like it's like, you know, those graphic photos of dead Syrian children that Trisha posts on her Facebook, and like covers it up, and like, this is a disturbing image. Click here if you want to see it. And it says false information reviewed by independent fact checkers, CY or C post. And the fact checker, more information, false. There's no evidence Hillary Clinton killed Jeffrey Epstein. It runs counter to medical examiner and federal prosecutor conclusions. So Instagram is now censoring our memes. We have been, if you can go check that out on our Instagram. But it was only a matter of time before we started being censored as fake news ahead of the 2020 elections. It will only get worse. I have maintained. Mm-hmm. I'll be amazed if any of us have access to Facebook or Instagram ahead of the 2020 election. They completely removed me from Facebook before the last election. I'd just be surprised if we have any posting power to our 96,000 Facebook likes in October of this year. So we'll see. But we are officially fake news, Reinhold. People have been saying you're fake news for years.
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing new for me. But here's the funny part. I've never been pulled off Facebook. Never,
really?
Not even at
first. Oh, you never had a ban?
Nope, never had a ban.
I'm smart enough to know how to get around it now.
How?
For a small cost of $19.99 a month, I will tell you how, Christopher. I do know the ins and outs of it, but I'm attached to lots of pages now because of that. So,
okay, $19.99 for Trisha's secrets on Facebook, $19.99 for Trisha's feet pic. I can't figure out which of
them. Yes. Oh, do the feet. I'll send you bath water for $100.
So give you a deal if you go all three, too.
For sure. And then you'll get some extras. Like, I'll sign some shit and send it to you.
How have your DMs been?
What's funny is Facebook has actually, like, filtered stuff more. So a lot of messages I get now say it's like this blank space and it says this was marked abusive.
Mm.
But I still get some. In fact, today I did. I took advice from Risa. She said, make it a business transaction. And if somebody wants to talk to you, they will continue. So I said, what can I do for you today?
How do you
make it a business transaction?
Yeah. What can I do for you today? How can I help you? Are you interested in libertarianism? I obviously work with the Ohio Mises Caucus. Said, would you want more information about the Mises Caucus or whatever? And if they get mad at that, they'll just go off. If not, then I don't mind talking to that person at all. But it was actually really good advice. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Okay, so somebody sends you just a DM to your personal account. You hit them with like some canned response that you've just copy and paste.
Occasionally I mess with them because it's fun. I'm not going to lie. Right.
It's hard. Listen, it's hard.
Sometimes I ask about their mom in several different ways.
Right.
Because I'm 12.
Right. Your mom jokes are hilarious, though.
They are funny. They never die. They'd be like, honey, how much do you love me? I'm like, how much do I love your mom? You know, and just
how many people have loved your mom is the real question.
Yes. But it's funny. A lot of men on those DMs, they'll just keep going on and on. You could drag it out infinitely. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to a letter from one of our patrons. The We Are Libertarians Christmas card. I don't know what I was thinking.
I liked it.
I decided, I was sitting there a couple weekends ago, I was like, you know what? I really do appreciate our patrons, and I'm going to send everybody a Christmas card. 200 handwritten cards later, my hand was bleeding. I looked like Tiny Tim in the hand. But it was worth it, and I've been touched by the response back. And hopefully, if you were a patron and you got your Christmas card, that if you didn't get your Christmas card, you please update your address in the Patreon system. But I hope that you enjoyed it, and I sent out Dear Leader's Christmas message for our patrons, just to let them know that when you donate on Patreon, that money goes to supporting new creators like Trisha and Gingerarchy, Brian Nichols. Because the reality is that, to be quite candid with you, when I started We Are Libertarians in 2012, 2013, we had the ability to grow organic reach 2012 through 2016. We had the ability to build a big Facebook page, to use my Facebook page to grow this, to grow audience. And the realities of social media are that since the Trump election, it is increasingly harder for there to be organic reach. And so one thing that we do here at We Are Libertarians is we promote new creators. We try to give voice to a large group of people. We've got Ryan over at the WAL Reader. We've got Reinhold and Libertarian Policy and Politics. We've got Gingerarchy with Trisha. We've got a couple new shows coming online, and the reason we do that is to help give a speedy, to basically like help you just promote your show, and we don't do that for everybody. I try to pick people that I think are really fun and interesting and kind of fit what we do here at We Are Libertarians, and give a greater voice, because organic reach is largely dead on social media. And so you've got to support libertarian creators. It's one of the reasons I created libertarianpodcast.com. And that website is just a listing of every libertarian podcast I possibly can find. There's some featured shows, but at the bottom, there's a list of as many as I can possibly find. Anybody is welcome to review that list and send me an email to update that. And it's just because I want the entire space to be promoted. And that is a service of our patrons. So when you are a member of our Patreon, you're helping to spread the libertarian message, not just here, but across the board. And one of those patrons sent me a great letter. His name is, I should have asked him because I talked to him today, Colin Gildner. All right, I think that's what it is. That's what I'm going with. And he joined Dear Leader's Court and sent me a beautiful note here that I want to read. And please, you're always welcome. If you're a listener, a Patreon member, whatever, send us a note. If you have a question, a comment, you want to complain about Reinhold or say nice things about him, that is welcome. Waifu questions for Harry, editor@wearelibertarians.com is the email address. You can also leave us a voicemail at wearelibertarians.com with SpeakPipe. Now, Chris writes, after listening to your latest podcast, I want to let you know how much your podcast has meant to me. I started listening around the 2016 election and survived the scat cat days of the podcast. Dark days indeed, Colin. That's a joke. I really don't want drama on this Christmas day. I really appreciate your delivery. When I talk to people about politics, I try to liken your strong yet respectful voice. I like this guy so far. Though I have always leaned right, I grew up in Northwest Washington. Left culture is much of a religion here as you think it would be. The left sucks, but if I am trying to change minds, I need tools to talk to them. You and those that work on your network never lose the ability to humanize. People on the left really do care about others and want to make the world a better place, but right now they are convinced a certain segment of the population are no longer human. When I have had success with the far left, it is through humanizing people for them, and I am considering any small move towards moderating a victory. I have appreciated listening to your personal growth as well. I lost 80 pounds in 2018 and understand that struggle. Hearing about your moves toward a healthier lifestyle was inspiring. I am not surprised that you're having so much success with what you do. Man, write a letter every week, Colin. I listen to The Pat Down because of you. Miss Pat is hilarious and opened my eyes to a lot of many different things while using comedy as the sugar on the spoon. She has taught me a lot. But I have been counting on having you around for the hysteria that is coming over the next year. Please continue as you are able. Your words come out of my mouth so often when I talk politics, it matters. Thank you, Chris. Sincerely, Colin. So thank you for the lovely letter. And I really do think that the line in your letter, and I am considering any small move towards moderating a victory. The idea that our goal, listen, we get into libertarianism, and you two correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we get into libertarianism because we want some massive, overarching structural change. And I think the longer you're a libertarian or the older you get, the more you realize if I can just make five people this year moderate or see other people as human beings and change their minds, that's a success for liberty. That it's all of our contributions, that those interpersonal contacts that we have with people, those are the successes for liberty as much as those big structural changes that will eventually come if we just get enough people.
Right. Can I speak to that, Chris?
Please.
I think that's actually beautifully stated, and everybody probably knows the Ayn Rand quote that the smallest minority is the individual, but it actually has the greatest power. You know, we sit and talk about politics, and it's important. Obviously, we're interested in politics, and so are the people that listen. But if you can change somebody's heart and mind and get them to think a little bit outside of the box, that's a lot of power. You know, when you get individuals to change their minds and think and let go of cognitive dissonance, that's where true power is, because power lies with the individual, not with a collective. So I think that's what's more important. And like you said, I really had to come there. You know, I had to make my way and inch my way towards that. But I think it's more important when I meet somebody that says, oh, you said something and it meant something to me, or I related it to my daily life. That's much more powerful than making a big statement and having a bunch of people follow you, because in the end, that will fall flat.
It's a lot easier as a goal, too.
Yeah.
You get a lot less frustrated if your goal is just to like make people think differently individually than it is to elect a libertarian president.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I do, you know, we talk about, I get so many people that hate on me for being involved in politics in the LP, obviously because I'm an anarchist, and there's plenty of us that are that just don't care about that. But it's like, do you think maybe that I just want to talk to people and that's a great conduit?
Yeah, right.
So that's okay too. I'm doing that.
So. Reinhold.
Power to people. No, that's the goal. I mean, really, I mean, yeah, the great dream would be that we would be able to let everybody know about retaining power for themselves and not giving it up to the state to use over yourself and for other people, right? So trying to rule other people's lives, there's no gain from that, you know, emotionally or for you as a person. So it'd be great to just have a mass understanding of that throughout the country. But realistically, all you can do as an individual is try to affect the people who you are closest to and around the most. And, right. You know, I can spend all my time on Facebook talking to a bunch of different libertarian minded people or libertarian thinking people and getting blocked by a third of them most of the time. but it doesn't, you know, you're speaking in a choir and an echo chamber at that point. Right. And yeah, we can further develop our libertarian views and beliefs. We can further kind of pump ourselves up by knowing there's other people out there like us who we can talk to and be friends with and or enemies with. But the real goal is getting the people who are sitting out there knowing that things aren't right and they don't know where to go to. And it's like we have like half the country just really almost being independents these days because they just don't really fit in the current political environment and they don't know why. So just kind of getting that information out there is the only way to affect that.
Yeah. And I think for us, it's been an effective strategy for us has been humor. And it's really hard to make a bunch of serious, sentimental or true or just, I guess, serious is the way to put a post on Facebook. Like, You can I really kind of like last year tried to like I want to hone in, I want to be as accurate as possible, I want to work on the best message, I want to, you know, write the most persuasive paragraph I possibly can. I would spend 2 hours sitting there fact checking this, writing the post, thinking it through, weeks processing it, post it.
God, we are so different, Christopher.
Only to have a person who spent zero time thinking about it go, nah. Like, and somewhere over the last like over 2019, I just realized, like, people just want to laugh. They just want to have a good time. Facebook is... Just be unserious on Facebook. And, like, right now I'm posting a bunch of, like, people keep sending me boomer thoughts on impeachment. And some of these are absolutely hysterical. They're in all caps. They're just, you actually got it started, Trisha, when you posted the first one in the Wall group. And
I love them so much. They bring me so much joy.
I felt bad about it today, though, when my grandmother's 80-something-year-old best friend shared it unironically and wrote, "Good thoughts, Chris." And I was like, "Ah, I meant to make millennials laugh, not boomers." A tea party guy, like Emery McClendon's big tea party guy from up north in Indiana, and he shared one unironically. Like, so it is fun.
Hey, but who will click on that and then follow down the rabbit hole?
It's mainly just to make my people laugh. I don't really care. Like, I just view social media, like, you think about it and you go, oh, you can't change minds on social media. But I will say that memes and shit posting on Facebook, I've had several people just kind of say, like, because you're the court jester, I've kind of actually saw your point of view a little bit more because I know I'm going to laugh. And so, like, don't just get on there and take yourself so seriously. Like, just enjoy your life.
I would definitely say, I wouldn't think that to be the end all be all. Like what Dennis said, the people you're close to, that's the most important. That's who you have the most effect on. But memes, that's art. Like, they have a lot of power that speaks volumes in a picture.
And that's the thing, is that media, like art, movies, books, have always been the best way to affect societal change. Fictional stories, you keep your guard down. If you know you're going to get lectured to, your guard is up and you're going, I'm not listening to what you're saying. I'm in my mind trying to figure out how to tell you you're wrong. But when you come across stuff in books and songs and comic books and videos and all kinds of different aspects, and memes is just another one of those methods. If you're not knowing you're getting preached to, if you're having a laugh or listening to a story and you come across some nugget of truth from that, it can affect you much more than any other method of trying to get information out. It can stay with you for your life
that way. Damn, y'all, they did it. They peached him. Write to him. Send him money. He is getting all my check this month and next. Help your president. All in all caps.
What happened to Larry?
Did something
happen to Larry? And
we have
around?
Just experienced the apex of selfish tyranny. Our nation under God has been cursed by the ravaged anger of those who continue to disbelieve anyone except them. Like, this is written by a pastor in Colorado, and a friend sent it to me. It's a boomer pastor.
He needs to stop praying to the state and start praying to Jesus.
It was
Lord.
Really unbelievable. This deceitful fog of egoism. That is the one that my boomer grandmother's friend said. So well said, Chris. Well,
to be fair, I did read part of that, and part of those things I kind of agreed with. The fact that people were so ugly, they stopped looking at finding truth and faith and religion and started looking at politics. But right. As a whole, it was very cringy.
What did you ask me, Reinhold? I got so distracted with the meme that I...
Oh, I was asking what happened to Larry.
Oh, so I used to have this character. Hey, Rob. I can't even do the voice really anymore. The reality is that character, the boomer Trump supporter with the hat, and there was a Snapchat filter, the one that kind of like turned your mouth upside down, and it was really funny. I always made myself laugh. And in 2016, he was kind of like, it was my redneck Trump supporting character. And Snapchat took away the filter, so it just didn't look as funny. It was really my face, and so it just kind of didn't work as much as I liked it. And then a guy I work with named Brent Terhune did this redneck character that is kind of like a Trump-supporting Southside redneck Hoosier. Fuck the NFL and go Coats. And it's so close to his character that if I brought him back, I'm afraid that people would think that I was stealing from Brent, even though Brent, there's a chance he may have seen my character. So I don't know. I saw that you could buy that filter. But I haven't gotten around to it. But I had people ask today for more Larry stuff. I should have kept doing it because it was
maybe
it was
you should stop being so cheap, Chris.
Maybe, but it would be like $7 a video to shoot, and like I'm just like yeah. So maybe we'll start a $7 a month Patreon fund for Larry. So
I think we could do that. You heard it here first.
I want to thank our patrons who give $100 a month. We want to start with Jeff Bennett. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being a patron. Matthew Durbin, thank you so much for being a $100 a month patron. Ed Brehob, good old intern Ed. We really appreciate him. Craig DaCosta, the man about town, traveling the world. Always great to see him and what he's up to. And Jason Doolittle. I won't violate HIPAA laws, but he's doing great, and we're very happy for him. Nothing serious. He just had eye surgery. Sorry, Jason. And then obviously Christy Avery, who just got some fantastic new glasses, has 6 days off. We're really happy for her, and finally glad that she had these glasses, Trisha. That one side of the glasses were square and the other side were oval. And
yeah, what the fuck was she doing?
They made me physically angry. When she showed up wearing those, I was mad at her. And I said, I would get in your hot tub before I'd ever wear glasses that look like that. She got braces too.
I plan on getting on Chrissy's hot tub. So,
well, enjoy your fecal soup. It's nothing against her hot tub. It's just all hot tubs are disgusting, bacteria filled. Soups of poop.
I won't listen to this.
You should. You want to get listeria? Okay.
I'm going to Vegas soon. I'm getting a hot tub. I'm going to a crypto mansion. It's all happening.
Yes.
Please don't destroy my
Thank you.
Life. Yeah. Don't be so afraid.
My Dennis. Chris can sit in his apartment with his cats and fear the E. coli.
I'm
going to live.
Okay. Go ahead and drink your salmonella soup. You enjoy that. Just go underwater.
I'm not drinking the hot tub water.
Oh, okay.
What if I'm not dehydrated?
I hope you don't have any open wounds on your toe and then you get gangrene. That'd be horrible. But I warned you if you do.
Horrible.
No sympathy. I'd just be like, I told you so.
Oh, God.
Like somebody's grandmother. Don't go out and you know what's going to happen. You're going to get a thing in your eye.
Your toe's going to turn green and fall off and none of the boys will like you. Thanks, Chris.
That's when you know somebody, a man especially, is a true best friend. Like somebody did something kind of mean on my Instagram recently and I'm like, all right, this is mean. This can only be one of my greatest friends in life or one of my worst enemies.
I know that feeling. Yeah. Who was it? Did you find out who it was?
Yes. He thinks he's
your friend.
No, it was not my friend. Oh. he's sneaky.
I thought it was maybe somebody we know that hosts a show.
No, it was not.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It was a very limited person of limited talent and low IQ. I want to congratulate two people, two hosts here on the We Are Libertarians Network. First, Brian Nichols of the Brian Nichols Show, who got married within the last month. Congratulations. He sent me photos, and Brian's wedding was beautiful. His bride was beautiful. Brian looked like Brian. It was a wonderful ceremony.
Brian is a great guy and really smart.
He really is. Really, he's such a sweetheart. Yeah. And also, Trisha Stewart got engaged.
I did.
Look at you getting engaged.
Surprise, surprise, y'all.
Blink twice if you need help. You promised you'd never get married again.
I did. And I mean, I have to stay, but, you know.
All right. So, well, congratulations. We are very happy for you. I won't do, when I got engaged in my first marriage, I won't do to you what the future ex-mother-in-law did to me, which is, are you sure?
Like to her?
Yeah. We called. Oh my. She goes, Mom, I'm engaged. And she goes, are you sure? She wasn't. So.
I'm holding back words about your lesbian marriage.
Thank you. Yeah. I was in the same.
I think everyone who's had a first marriage and they're working on their second can tell you.
That's
that.
Me.
Learned a lot. From the first go around, especially about how sometimes your parents saw it coming and you should have listened.
Right.
Well, or your parents pushed something that you shouldn't have listened to. but I don't know who that would be.
I was talking to somebody the other day. Why do you think that there have been so many first marriages and second marriages work out? And I said, because I think our generation, with no disrespect meant to anybody who actually served overseas, Afghanistan and Iraq were not like Vietnam even, or especially World War I or World War II. I think like men take a lot longer to grow up. And it really is one of those things where it's like I had to have a profoundly horrifying experience like divorce to make me grow into an actual man. And I think like for my grandfather, he had the war. And so my war was my opponent, the ex-Mrs. Spangle. So I don't know if that's a theory that holds water, but I'm putting that out there for people to mull over. If it catches on, I want credit.
Well, everybody needs their war.
That's right. You had the meme war of 2016.
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much, we're all going to have successful marriages now.
Ryan Held has the meme war of the 2020 chairs race.
Ryan Held.
Are you stalking?
You cut out on me there. So
all right. Let's move on. Let's get to the topic at hand. Let's talk about the Office of Inspector General's report. We should touch on impeachment, but maybe we'll talk about that at the end because I've just had an ass full of impeachment. I know Dennis could talk about it all day.
You should probably put something on that.
I really should because it's full. maybe we'll get some thoughts at the end of the episode. But want to talk a little bit about the Inspector General's report that got released last week. And it was... So an inspector general is essentially every government agency has an inspector general, and they are like a nonpartisan watchdog. They are the HR department, for lack of a better term, for a government agency. And so they are to be an independent investigatory body into the agency that they watch over. So if you are, let's say, a whistleblower in the energy department, you go to the lawyers at the Office of Inspector General and they will investigate it for you. And so,
right. It works just as well as the cops.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what's the SVU version of it? What's the cops investigating the cops?
Internal affairs.
Now, her snark notwithstanding, inspector general reports generally do try to be fair. They do try to – they are very deep in scope. They really try to dive deep. And these reports, like I think this was what, Reinhold, like 400 pages?
It was big, yeah.
Yeah, four or 500 pages. And it was basically just this massive detailed investigation into the FBI's investigation of the 2016 campaign into their connections with Russia. And they wanted to make sure that it was a justified inspection and that it wasn't driven by political bias. But what they found as they did it, now mainstream media touted this as a complete, this just proves that Donald Trump pushes conspiracy theories about the deep state. Just shows that James Comey and the FBI, they were all on the up and up. But it actually revealed several glaring problems, and people who are civil libertarians will look at this report and the episode with the details we're about to give you and see some glaring problems. Some problems that when we talked about the revelations that Edward Snowden brought about, they've come home to roost, and they're contained in a lot of this information. Go ahead.
The fact that we discovered through this investigation that the federal government doesn't always work well. This is my shock. All right.
See, I told you the OIG was on the up and up, Trisha. You didn't believe me.
But when you talk about Inspector General, too, that's where the whistleblower for the Ukraine thing came from, was the intelligence communities. Investigator General, right? The complaint went to him. He determined it was valid complaint and therefore forwarded on. So that's where that came from. So that's what those inspectors do.
I have to be honest. You all have to go subscribe to the What We Are Libertarians YouTube channel to watch this video to see how handsome Reinhold looks. Like, he looks genuinely good. Like, I'm watching him talk. I'm like, I can't even hear what he's saying because I'm just like, when did Reinhold get handsome?
What did your house do to him, Chris? Is the question I have.
He stopped coming over here and he got better looking.
his camera, I'll be honest with you, I don't know. It's,
No, I've been on Chris's camera. It made me look like 15 pounds heavier.
I'm blaming it on that too. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I do want to admit, with all full honesty, I do have the moonlighting filter. I don't know if you understand that reference because it's an old person reference.
I thought you were going to say makeup, but that's okay.
No, I don't have makeup. Actually, my wife and I toyed with, because I said something about I need to do something because I look kind of horrible on the videos. And she's like, well, we can do this. And I talk about my beard. So we were trying to do some stuff to kind of color the beard and stuff and things. And it looked pretty, it looked good, but it also looked kind of eh. So I just took it all. I got rid of all that. But
so
she's wanting to put makeup on.
What do you use? What do you use, a Logitech?
Yeah, it's a Logitech 615. It's nothing. It's not big. It's like a $30 camera.
Well, mine's a 920, so I need to cut mine by a third and maybe I'll look better.
But it's I got a ring light, which really helps with the lighting. Before, I was just getting weird lights because my overhead light's not in the middle of the room.
Yeah. Well, now you look like George Clooney is all I'm saying. I look terrible. My hair looks great, but that's – so back to the OIG report. But, yeah, go check out our YouTube channel, please. We post all these videos up on YouTube. We also post audio versions of the episode. So you can catch up and watch us on Roku and Apple TV and whatever. So check out those episodes there. Now, Scott Shackford of Reason Magazine said the following. The report analyzes the circumstances under which the FBI asked the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Amendment courts, the FISA courts, for permission to secretly wiretap Carter Page, a foreign policy advisor in Trump's campaign. FBI officials were concerned that Page might be compromised or working as a foreign agent, and they sought and received permission to wiretap him, permission they renewed three separate times. So the FISA courts are secret courts that were created. So they're intelligence courts, basically.
And they're illegitimate.
And so they go, and there's no due process. They do it in secret, usually. Now, these FISA courts, almost none of them are denied. Am I remembering correctly from past shows that, like, 99% of these things are just approved blindly?
99% are just rubber stamped.
Right.
And they could have sent them a folder full of blank paper. And it probably would have been approved.
Right. And so these are they're secret because they don't want them, you know, showing up in court documents. Let's say they're trying to indict Russian spies. They don't want Russia to be tipped off, but they want permission to then wiretap a Russian spy. In this case, they felt that Carter Page, an advisor to the Trump campaign, was a compromised Russian asset. And they renewed a wiretap on him three separate times. Now, the FBI's request to the FISA court relied partly on a dossier alleging that Russian officials had compromising info on Trump, a dossier the former British spy Christopher Steele had developed as a political weapon. That raised the question of whether the FISA court had received an adequate explanation about the dossier's roots and credibility. Now, stating in that report, our review found that FBI personnel fell far short of the requirement in FBI policy that they ensure that all factual statements in a FISA application are scrupulously, quote-unquote, accurate. We identified multiple instances in which the factual assertions relied upon the first FISA application were inaccurate, incomplete, or unsupported by appropriate documentation based upon information the FBI had in its possession at the time the application was filed. Now, the Steele dossier is something put together by Fusion GPS, That was Fusion GPS was started by former Wall Street Journal reporters. The guy was not happy that he wasn't doing as much investigative journalism, so he decided to do his investigative journalism for various people that would pay him privately. And one of those were a large Republican backer that, through the Washington Examiner, I believe it was, started doing a background check, essentially opposition research on Donald Trump. Now, this is all fairly standard. What you were hearing in all of this, and that's part of the beauty of the Trump administration, is that because the media is so out to get Donald Trump, cue the eye rolls from Reinhold, that they expose the entire political process as if it is a wholly problematic part of Donald Trump's world. But this is how politics really works. And so we, over the last 4 years, have had a great douching, a colonoscopy, if you will, of how politics works. And so a big donor was backing a Republican candidate. The Fusion GPS folks won't say which one. And the Washington Examiner and this big donor basically paid for opposition research for this Republican candidate on Donald Trump because they felt that he could possibly actually win the nomination. Now, when that candidate dropped out or the Washington Examiner dropped the research, Hillary Clinton and her campaign picked it up. And the eventual background research was what is called the Steele dossier or the P-tape dossier. It had a bunch of information. Now, Reinhold and I have argued time and time again. I have asserted that the Steele dossier was the entire linchpin of all of the Russian special Mueller investigations and all of the Russian hoax, and he claimed that that was not true. I have been vindicated thanks to the government investigations. The Steele dossier was circulating in Washington, D.C. for a while. It wound up in the hands of John McCain, who then took it to the FBI, who then predicated the investigation's beginnings into Carter Page. The Steele dossier was a mixture of wild allegations like Donald Trump reveled in sleeping in the bed that Michelle and Barack had slept in, and he had Russian hookers pee on it, on the bed as an FU to them, all the way down to like very serious, true, accurate information. This British spy went over to Russia, found as many threads as he could. It came back, and that's really where the Russian hoax, the Russian narrative that Donald Trump was in cahoots with the Russians began. So it's all been a fiction from the very beginning. I will let Reinhold refute that because I know he wants to, but he can't because I have an OIG report that says I'm right and he's not.
No, the OIG report does mention what I stated is that the Operation Crossfire was opened by the alerting basically to the FBI of Papadopoulos stating that they had information and they were working with the Russians on getting information on Hillary. That started the investigation. Mm-hmm. The Carter Page thing used the Steele dossier to validate itself, which it didn't really need to do. It would have been validated anyway, but they did use that Steele dossier in getting the renewals for the Carter Page wiretap.
Right.
That was a problem, but that doesn't mean that the whole thing started out of the Steele dossier, because it didn't. It started a month or a couple months earlier through the Operation Crossfire through Papadopoulos.
I take all of your true and verifiable facts and say you're wrong. I'm right. there are several threads, and the reality is that Donald Trump's campaign being approached by the Russians is not in and of itself unusual. Foreign actors try to infiltrate every presidential campaign. They try to get secrets for campaigns are like sieves. And that's the easiest place to get access to political information. If you show up and start stamping envelopes and you do that for 6 weeks in a row, there's a pretty good chance that after a few months, you may end up in the main room. And so, you know, if you can get something going on a campaign, then you can get some pretty good intel if you have the right people placed. Now, it was pretty clear over the course of the last few years that every time the Russians tried to gain access to Trump's campaign, it just didn't really go anywhere. They were either too incompetent or they were too smart or whatever you want to say. I don't know. It's open to interpretation, but there wasn't much of a campaign to infiltrate, I think, may be the way to put it.
I think he had some people around him who were smart enough to see what was going on and stop it. Like, as much as I hate to say this, Jeff Sessions identified that was kind of happening and stopped it.
Didn't Manafort just
say kinder words to him at all? But
didn't Manafort basically get up and walk out of the meeting with Trump Jr. and the Russian lawyer or something? What was the Don Jr. meeting in the
Power,
didn't Manafort or Kushner or somebody realize what was going on and got the hell out of there?
Might have been Manafort. I know it wasn't Trump Jr.
Yeah, right.
Completely oblivious. And that's kind of the part of the problem is that there are some people on the campaign who were oblivious, and Papadopoulos was one of those.
Right.
And that's where kind of all of that started.
Right. So, Tricia, do you have any questions, any comments? Feel free
I have
to
a
jump
question
in.
For Dennis.
Go ahead.
Sure. Dennis, do you honestly think that Donald Trump, who's a buffoon, we can both agree on that, was actively knowledgeable about what was happening during that time and wanted to collude with the Russians to interfere with the election and give them some type of payback when he became president? Do you actually think that happened?
Donald Trump is a very transactional person. I do not believe that he was actively seeking out information from Russia, but I also do not believe he would have turned it down had he got it.
I wouldn't disagree with you, actually.
He said live on TV that he wouldn't turn it down if he got it. He said in an interview, they said, well, if somebody were to come to you now that this happened and a foreign power came to you with information about a rival, would you take it? And he said, yeah, I'd take it. I mean, that's what he said live on TV. I don't know how you can dispute that, but there's evidence right now that because of the Roger Stone trial that Trump knew about the impending release of the WikiLeaks information and lied to the Mueller investigation that he didn't, because Gates, I think, said that he was in the room when it happened, and he knows that Trump knew about it and it was coming.
Did he say that under oath?
Yeah, in the Roger Stone trial. So there's an investigation right now to find out if Trump was lying, committed perjury during the Mueller investigation. So, I mean, it's going to be hard to prove perjury because the way that Trump answered the question was, to the best of my knowledge, I don't remember this. So they're going to have a hard time proving that he did remember it when he lied or when he was interviewed by the Mueller team. Which was on paper. It wasn't person to person, but, so I don't think they're going to prove that, and they're not going to ever prove it to the Trump fans either, but there is some question here that, it's possible that he did know. And according to the sworn testimony in the Roger Stone trial, it happened. So.
I believe that. Can I make a side note, Chris, which
Go
is philosophical, but I do that because I'm an anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
I find it funny that we, you know, I'm not so much into the political process as I once was. So I kind of actually lean on you and Dennis, and I appreciate you following that more because I've just given up on so much of it. But I do find it really funny when we talk about people being involved in our political process and elections. That's what we do.
Right.
Well, that is, the United States is really freaking good
if you look at
meddling in people's elections. Good. And so to be somehow be so offended
that's the
some
hilarity.
Other country who didn't even violently coerce us, Russia, I mean, whatever, it's Russia. I'm not saying it's good or bad one way or the other, but I mean, come on. We like bomb the piss out of people, literally allow their dictators to be murdered in the streets because we want somebody else in, and we're going to bitch about somebody offering something. Hypocritical.
Yeah, if you look at the Ukrainian situation, you look at what Joe Biden was doing, and Joe Biden, by all accounts, has done absolutely nothing wrong because this is the way that the system works.
Right.
Joe Biden.
Well, he's a horrible human being, number one, and he's, I can't stand the fact that he's
all right,
to
calm
save
down.
The children. Okay.
Calm down.
But anyways, you're right. In that
let me make the point. Joe Biden was basically using what Dennis will say is that Joe Biden was doing nothing wrong because he was acting within the foreign policy establishment and the World Bank and other people in leaning on the Ukrainians and withholding funds until they fired a prosecutor. Now, I'm not going to stick up for the prosecutor because he sounds like a piece of garbage, but like Joe Biden brags about how he went and swung his big vice presidential dick around in their elections to help, you know, certain people get elected and kick other people out. It's like, that's all we do. Like, we are consistently trying to meddle in foreign affairs. It's like,
yeah,
I don't get the idea that somehow we are, when we do it, it's okay, but when other countries
we're
do it to
when
us,
somebody
this
else
is
does
just,
it.
The Russians are propagandizing America. It's like, yeah.
So just to get into this conversation a little bit, two things. First, we weren't actually holding aid. The threat wasn't withholding aid, it was holding loan guarantees.
Okay.
So we were providing $1 billion in loans to help them with, you know, after their revolution and everything. And help get them going again.
Right.
And
so it wasn't constitutionally mandated funds like in Trump's situation where Congress said you need to do this. Right. Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Right.
And it was like, well, why are we giving you the loans if you've got a prosecutor who's not going after this? He wasn't investigating the owner of Burisma like he was supposed to. That's what the UK was upset about.
But that's been sort of the point of like the John Perkins book, Reinhold, is that it's the World Bank, the United States. It's neocolonialism. You're dependent on these loans now, so do what we want you to do.
Right, 100%. And that's kind of how we operate, right? You know, it's just the way it's always been. The other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is, and I've said this before, Russia, we have a thing in the United States that we call freedom of speech, right?
Not on this podcast.
And freedom of speech is an inalienable right. It means that since it's an inalienable right, that the right doesn't come from government. So government can't take that right away from you, right? No matter who you are.
Right.
So why do we say that Russia can't say what they want to say? I mean, they have an inalienable right to free speech to say whatever they want to say in our presidential election.
So I would address that.
Why do we have law against that? Nope.
Nobody even pays attention to that, Dennis. You're completely right. I wish people cared. I wish people actually believed in natural rights and that the government couldn't infringe on them. But they actually don't even look at it. Like, I don't think most people are even well-versed in what a natural right is. They think the government owns them.
Genuinely look at Abby Martin, who was paid by the Venezuelan government. And I look at Daniel McAdams, the person who is Ron Paul's co-host. And I see some of the things that they say, and I really find them to be very suspect. But what power does Abby Martin and Daniel McAdams really have in this country? If let's say Daniel McAdams is getting a big fat check from Putin, and from all accounts, it's like, okay, let's find this guy, let's hook him up with this prominent non-interventionist congressman in Ron Paul who has a new TV network. Let's like really compromise this guy and get him to feed our narrative. It goes out to a bunch of libertarians in black t-shirts, of which I am one. Like, what power do they really have? You know what I mean?
Very little
power, you know? And so, or Abby Martin, who goes on, who's the progressive comedian show I really like, Jimmy Dore, or goes on Joe Rogan, like, What power does Abby Martin, if she's a compromat from Russia or Venezuela, like what power does Abby Martin really have? Like, there, who watches RT for fun? So the idea
I do.
They're paying Adam Kokesh. Who the hell, after 10 years in the libertarian movement, we all know who the guy is, and we're not listening to Adam Kokesh. So
I do like RT, though. I have a couple good friends that write and are journalists for them.
Yeah, but the reality is the reach on those ads that those 16 Russians were charged by Mueller over, and I can tell you as a person who does digital marketing for a living, who works with audiences for a living, you know, like David Stockman was on Tom Wood's show saying that evidence of Ukrainian meddling in the 2016 election was an article by the Ukrainian ambassador in the Wall Street Journal or Washington Post. one op-ed article in a newspaper is not meddling. Right. It's not significant.
That's free speech.
It's not significant in any way. Yeah, like people, I think people don't have, and including congressmen, don't have an understanding of the absolute order of magnitude you must have in messaging for people to really buy into it. You really have to have a very deep, consistent, constant, like if you think about in the libertarian world, if I say boogaloo, many of the people in our audience know exactly what I mean with that word. Well, that's because it's been repetitively put into your feed time and time again in memes, in forms that you will accept. Now, could some Russian troll be creating the word boogaloo and trying to develop a network of libertarian Gen Z kids who are ready for the Civil War to light off at any moment? Maybe. But the reality is that's probably much more organic than the government would like to admit, because if the government admits that messaging in a free society is almost completely organic and up to the people and what they decide, then they short circuit because they realize they don't actually have power anymore. And so the idea that the Russians are influencing the next election is just a narrative for them to continue the bludgeon against the duly elected president that they've continued. And so when you look at this OIG report, the most damaging thing about it is that it does confirm a lot of the concerns that many people, you know, Trump took so much shit in 2016 in that election when he said they're wiretapping my campaign. And nobody at the time knew what he meant. But if he had a copy of this 400-page OIG report and that got released that day, everybody would be like, holy shit, look what they're doing to this American citizen, Carter Page. You know, and so there, the reality is that the problem with the OIG report is that when advocates of privacy, like the people who have appeared on this program over the course of its history, the number one thing we said about Edward Snowden's revelations back when they came out on We Are Libertarians was, this is very dangerous. This is a secret information gathering system for our government. Let's look at Barack Obama, and we can say, Barack Obama seems very trustworthy. He seems like he'd do the right thing. What happens when the next president isn't that person? Now, that was years before Donald Trump ever thought about running for president. Donald Trump is not that person. He's a vindictive person. He is a person that has clearly tried to use his office to go after the people he finds to be his tormentors. And so why should Donald Trump have access to secret FISA courts that can then spy wholesale on all of the electronic information of his political enemies? Why should he have that power? He doesn't have that power because he's being neutralized by the establishment figures around him, and they won't let him do that. But what happens when the establishment figures themselves have a president like Barack Obama who is deeply committed to their agenda, who then allow them to use these tools against American citizens whom they deem to be outsiders and a threat to their system? And that's what this OIG report does so effectively. And that is why it is not a vindication of this system. It is an indictment of the system in many ways.
It really is. It is an indictment of these agencies. And what's troubling, everything you said, people will care. People won't care. They don't even understand the process and their rights. They don't understand that spying on, since the Patriot Act, I don't think most Americans even understand what a violation that was, because it's just normal now.
Right.
So spying on a president, that doesn't get anybody's like hair on anybody's neck stand up. It's just a thing we do.
Well, his defenders get the hairs on the neck stand up, but only because their president who's getting this treatment. They're not concerned about the millions of other people who are having to deal with this, and they're having their rights taken away because of that. I mean, that's the whole thing about this that really kind of gets me, and I think that's what a lot of people like Reason and some other, all the civil libertarians are yelling about, is that we've been telling you this is going on. This isn't an isolated incident involving Donald Trump and Carter Page.
Don't have to like Trump to realize that this is a problem.
Right. No, it's frustrating. You're right, Dennis, because it's like people are like, oh, but my team and this person did this and they shouldn't. It's like, we've been saying this. Why did you not care when it was the person you liked or vice versa? this, it's just wrong across the board. But we've been, people are so conditioned. I mean, we're just, we're boiling in the pot right now. American society doesn't care.
Yeah, what I found funny, and it goes back to the impeachment and not the OIG report, but when the phone records were released in the report from the House, and there was just so much hand-wringing over the fact that these phone records were made available, and it's like, you're the people who, you're complaining about this, your information getting released or your information being used and spied on. And you're the one who just a couple of weeks before renewed the Patriot Act.
Right.
And just, it just, you're supporting this happening to all these other people. But if it happens to you, you're going to be upset about it. That really irritated me.
Yeah. So let's go, let's jump back into the notes and let's talk about the 7 problems that the IG office found with the very first warrant application. Now, they included leaving out the fact that Page in the past had provided the FBI with information about his contacts with Russian intelligence officers. He told on himself, and they didn't count that. Overstating the degree that Steele's prior reporting had been used in criminal proceedings. Omitting information from Steele himself that one of his sources was prone to boasting and may have some credibility issues. Incorrectly claiming that Steele wasn't the source of the leak of his information to Yahoo News, and even omitting some comments from consensual interviews with Page where he denied having met certain Russian officials. The errors were not corrected in the renewal applications. The IG report noted that the FBI was unable to corroborate any of the information about Page that was in the Steele report, and even as they kept seeking renewal of the wiretapping, and Page has not been charged with any crimes. So Page has not been charged with any crimes. They kept renewing, even though they knew there were problems with that particular surveillance. Now, altogether, the IG found 17 incidents which, quote, serious performance failures by the supervisory and non-supervisory agents with responsibility over the FISA applications, but they were still able to conclude that there was no political bias. The findings in this report undercut the government's position that FISA courts are... Now, they were not able to conclude that there is political bias. It doesn't mean that they were able to conclude that there was no political bias. That is an important point that seems to be left out of reporting by people like the Washington Post. They say it vindicates the FBI and that Donald Trump is making it all up, but that's not the case. They were not able to find out that nobody fessed up to their motives, essentially. Now, the findings in this report undercut the government's position that FISA courts are a sufficient guardian of American civil liberties and that the FBI is capable of responsibly exercising the vast powers granted to it. No one should feel confident that a court would block the FBI from engaging surveillance, even if the information was flawed. If this hadn't happened in such a high-profile case involving their current president, would you and I even know about this? A spokesperson for the FBI said the report does, quote, does not impugn the FBI's institutional integrity. It doesn't doubt or propose any changes to the FBI's mission or core values. It doesn't criticize or even question that the brand that this organization has earned over 111 years. Now, you may have heard the name Michael Horowitz. He was the Justice Department Inspector General. He announced in the report, sorry, I got distracted. Christianity Today called for the removal of Donald Trump, so that's going to be screeching. So Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General, that's okay, also announced in the report plans to conduct an additional audit to determine how well the FBI follows proper procedures when requesting permission from the secretive FISA court to surveil American citizens. Quote, given the extensive compliance failures we identified in this review, we believe that additional OIG oversight work is required to assess the FBI's compliance with Department and FBI FISA-related policies that seek to protect the civil liberties of U.S. persons. Accordingly, we today have initiated an OIG audit that will further examine the FBI's compliance with the Woods procedures and FISA and those the Woods procedures and the FISA applications that target U.S. persons in both counterintelligence and counterterrorism investigations. The Woods procedure describes the length process the FBI officials are supposed to go through when submitting a FISA application to make sure every factual piece of information had been properly vetted and verified. It is supposed to be a painstaking process of dotting every I and crossing every T to get permission to use the FISA court to secretly surveil an American citizen on American soil. Former FBI agent Asha Rangappa explained in 2017 how difficult it was supposed to be to get a FISA warrant to wiretap Carter Page. The FBI should not have casually gotten permission to spy on Page for political purposes. Now, the ACLU issued a statement voicing their concerns about this report, saying, quote, "For instance, the litany of problems with Carter Page surveillance applications demonstrates how the secrecy shrouding the government's one-sided FISA approval process breeds abuse. The system requires fundamental reforms, and Congress can start by providing defendants subjected for FISA surveillance the opportunity to review the government's secret submissions. The FBI must also adopt higher standards for investigations involving constitutionally protected sensitive activities, such as political campaigns." Now, in early 2018, the GOP and Democrats in the House Intelligence Committee released dueling memos on the FBI's FISA applications. The GOP memo, often called the Nunez memo, said that, quote, "material and relevant information was omitted from the applications, including the dossier formed an essential part of the initial application, and there was minimal corroboration." The Democratic memo argued that the GOP memo had omitted key details and twisted facts. I can't believe they didn't agree. FBI and DOJ officials did not abuse the FISA process, omitting information or subverting this vital tool to spy on the Trump campaign, the Democratic memo said. Quote, "DOJ met the rigor, transparency, and evidentiary basis needed to meet the FISA's probable cause requirement." The Democratic memo also said that the FBI made use of only narrow information from the Steele sources about Page's specific activities, and that senior FBI and DOJ officials have repeatedly affirmed to the committee the reliability and credibility of Steele's reporting. So that's an instance where the House Democrats were basically sticking up for the FBI and got caught with their pants down once the OIG report came out. So clearly there are some very serious problems with the way that that information is handled. And it's very obvious, as any libertarian I think would agree, that a secret anonymous court that doesn't give due process to the people being tried, basically, is going to be abused by the government, because the government is the government is your judge, jury, executioner, and your defense attorney. Not surprised that there was abuse at all.
That's just crazy talk, Chris. I mean,
I know.
You're all in on the conspiracy theories, aren't
I
you?
I know.
Well, it's how government works. So the funniest thing I remember from the first days of the Patriot Act being used is a lot of people would get search warrants on there, and they would actually get notified that they're getting searched, but they were told they're not allowed to tell anybody, including their own lawyer, that it was happening.
Right.
How do you mount a defense against that? If you can't tell anybody, including your lawyer, what's going on, how do you even you can't even say anything at all. It's mind-bogglingly a violation. And what I want to see is when this renewal for the Patriot Act comes up, I want all these Republicans who are complaining about this to Donald Trump. I want them standing up and saying, we need to not sign this. And I guarantee you that they all will, except for five or six, I think the usual list.
I would contend that the Patriot Act in my lifetime is the largest aggression against liberty, hands down, for myself as an American. Obviously, I don't live in a foreign country where I'm getting the shit blown out of me, but it really is. I don't think people understand the gravity of it.
Yeah. And as someone who's been around a little longer than you, the Patriot Act was really just built on some previous violations, you know, the RICO statutes and everything else in the 70s and 80s. And in fact, the phone records being released by the Congress, that came from an act from 1978. Mm. So it's not something really new. It's just ramping up. It's like the Patriot Act is like the slam dunk on the encroachments they've been trying to put on us for years. And since nobody said anything back then, everybody's like, well, it's just a little thing. And we kind of need this for this reason. We need to go after organized crimes. We need the RICO statutes. And we want to get the drug dealers. We need to get the drug guys. So we'll add them to it. And it just builds and builds. And everybody, little by little, just accepts what's going on, that something like the Patriot Act can happen. Because if that had been suggested back in the 70s, everybody would have lost their minds. Mm-hmm. But as they're conditioned to accept it over and over and over the years, we need that.
So, yeah. So you're telling me that it starts small and then the government expands it because the people don't give a shit that the government's expanding something that they're not allowed to have.
Well, it's the old frog in the boiling water.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you try to put a frog in the boiling water, he's going to jump out, but you put him in water and slowly turn it up, he'll boil to death. So, and that's why it kind of goes back to my whole thing on the libertarianism is people want to have this big revolution that we're going to just change overnight everything about the government, and a libertarian is going to take hold. And it's like, that's not how it works. That's not how we should be approaching it. That's how, you know, if you look at what the socialists did, they decided to do little by little by little.
Yeah.
Where libertarians decided to try and do it all in one big hit. They succeeded. Libertarianism didn't. So we haven't taken that lesson yet.
That's very true. Socialism is, you know, prerequisite to communism. I mean, it was designed that way, but they were smart enough to do that. You know, they didn't come and sell this, hey, we're going to redistribute all the wealth and then eventually have one economy. And, you know, they were a lot smarter than that. I think libertarians, we get so passionate about liberty that we're kind of retarded.
Oh, yeah. And I got us off on a little bit of a rant, but aside, but yeah, that's the whole argument between radical change and incrementalism within the movement. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a place for both, but you can't discount the effect that actual incrementalism has on affecting change, because people are not going to vote for something that they're too scared of. They need to be able to get up the day after an election and know that they still have a job, they still have roads to drive on, that sort of thing. I mean, it's when they feel there's too much chaos being introduced, they're going to push back. But if you do a little bit here and a little bit there, and you prove your case, and you prove that, okay, we don't think there should be as much licensing, you know, so let's take some of the licensing away. Mm-hmm. And you see that it succeeds. And now let's take some of those building permit issues that we have to deal with. And all of a sudden housing starts to increase and your housing, homeless problem starts to disappear because people now have places to go and provide, people are providing places for them. You start to see this stuff affecting the community and you go, okay, well, let's try a little, we believe you now, let's try a little bit more of that. And then you provide more and you get to that place where people start believing it. They're not just going to accept it on your word to change society overnight. It's just not going to happen.
No. And I had to come around to that. And that's where, you know, being an anarchist, there's a lot of people, and actually it's not a lot, it's just a small minority that have really loud, obnoxious voices. Yes. That are all or nothing. And they'll yell at me, but I didn't wake up an anarchist. And if it was up to them, I would still be a neocon. They would shout me down and tell me I was stupid and I wouldn't have listened. It was the people that were libertarians that, you know, said, hey, what do you think about this? And I was a conservative and I didn't want big government. And so some of that stuff made sense. And then the farther I went, the more I realized how wrong I was. But it doesn't happen overnight. And I don't think that liberty is going to happen in one big fell swoop. That's not how that happens. But the Patriot Act was... There was the John the Baptist that came long before, and then the Patriot Act was the messiah of the government.
I get this message from people, too. It's like, well, the United States started with the big revolution. I mean, why can't we do that? It's like, that took years to get. You know, a lot of writers had to be writing, and the thoughts had to get put in, you know, and John Locke stuff had to get kind of pushed around, and then Payne had to write his book. I mean, it just, that took so much effort and time and everything. And it wasn't as clean as people think it was either. You know, it was a bit of a mess. There's a lot of people who didn't really want or care about any of that. They just wanted to go about their lives. Right.
So, well, it was definitely a culmination of philosophy and a good, fertile ground for it to happen.
So it was not an overnight thing.
Are we getting too philosophical, Chris, and not talking about FISA warrants?
Yeah, we're way off.
No, you're fine. I'm sleepy. I'm very tired. So my brain wandered off, and I was like, I hope Harry's okay. I haven't heard from him. I bet he's mad at me.
Hi, Harry.
I always worry about Harry because Harry's so busy, and I don't want to lose him, but I'm overthinking. You ever do that where you're like, Harry probably just never saw the message? And I'm like, man. Harry's going to see this episode, think that we tried to kick him off, and I have this whole scenario that I'm sitting here worrying about. And I'm like, Harry is probably bathing Gunther, playing War of Waifus 3. Like, his wife is making him mac and cheese. Who knows what he does?
He's drinking hot tea.
Right.
By the Christmas tree.
I didn't know that he's not playing Paladins right now.
I know. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you should have been more proactive with your communication, but you're also
Just get into Discord and told him he reads this.
I know. But I'd also.
But everybody who listens to this podcast can join the Discord and talk to Harry.
I need people to go talk to Harry in the Discord.
Chris
go
won't be there.
Go to look at the We Knew We Are Libertarians.
Just go ask if he still likes him and then like check yes or no. And then if he does, you could send it back to Chris.
That's actually a really funny troll. Go into the Discord and just for like the next week or two until we come back, ask Harry like every day if he still likes me. That'll be funny. So that's how, please do that. I will log into Discord and laugh every time. All right. So let's get into media bias. Let's talk about that. Because this is one of those instances where Trump is just the lodestar for society right now, where everything is about Trump. Everything that you believe, everything that is reported, everything is about Trump, 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 Trump. And it's kind of exhausting because there's more than Donald Trump in the world. But we just, like, I'm seeing, like, libertarians who I, you know, recruited 10 years ago into the LP. They're now, like, super pro-Trump, anti-impeachment. And it's just like, listen, I'm more skeptical about all this than like Reinhold is, but like, how are you going to jump from going, like, he clearly violated his constitutional duties and withholding the funds that Congress said he had to disperse and he didn't. There's emails basically saying that they were trying to figure out a good cover-up story. Like, how do you go from a libertarian less than 10 years ago talking about constitutional libertarianism to now you're trying to figure out a way to cover Trump's ass in violation of the Constitution? Like, it's just weird how everybody's become obsessed with this guy, and mainly the media. The media loves Donald Trump. Like, they really do love that he exists because it gives them something to talk about. He's interesting. Sometimes nothing gives a person meaning like hating someone else or being petty towards them. And a lot of the actions of the media, like this Washington, I believe it was a Washington Post group of journalists. One posted them sitting at a D.C. restaurant at a table. They've all got big smiles on their faces, and it says "Merry Impeachmas." And it's like, that is not the quiet solemnity of which we were all supposed to be operating in. Like, the reality is that all of those Republicans who were celebrating the day after Trump got elected and were so excited, and like their leftist friends were just like, how could they behave this way? They should show respect towards our grief. And now the table has been totally flipped. It's like, how could they celebrate on impeachment day? It's like, you just picked up the signs on the other side of the street. So the media has, let's listen to some of what the media has said about this OIG report. Adventures in Missing the Point, to be sure. So Aaron Blake of the Washington Post wrote 4 takeaways from the Horowitz report on the Russia investigation. What was his number one takeaway? Quote, a triple rebuke to Trump's conspiracy theories. He wrote, "There will be plenty of shouting in the hours and days ahead, especially given that Horowitz's report found some alleged FBI misconduct and omissions. But proponents of the Russia investigation didn't argue that it was flawless. President Trump and his allies, on the other hand, argued it was an unfounded witch hunt and lodged conspiracy theories about how it was an effort to take him down, even a coup. This Horowitz report, in its core findings, does not back up Trump's and his allies' conspiracy theories. In fact, it undercuts a number of them." CNN led with, quote, "conspiracy theories debunked," and called the Russia probe, quote, "legally unbiased," before they conceded serious mistakes by the FBI that the network predominantly attributed to a, quote, low-level FBI lawyer. The article states, quote, "The report accuses a former FBI lawyer of altering a document related to the surveillance of campaign aide Carter Page, but Horowitz did not find that undermined the overall validity of the surveillance. They also noted the Trump report, the report essentially rebuts more than 2 years of talking points by Trump and Republicans about a deep state effort to derail his campaign. The Washington Post also suggests that this report explicitly proves there was no attempt at a deep state coup. Trump made a statement saying, the report actually, and especially when you look into it, and the details of the report, are far worse than anything I would have even imagined. This was an overthrow of government. This was an attempted overthrow, and a lot of people were in on it, and they got caught. They got caught red-handed. Commenting on this statement, the Washington Post wrote, "Trump sticks with conspiracy theories. There is nothing in the report that supports an overthrow of government. In fact, as we noted, the IG found the political bias did not factor into the start of the probe. The IG report found that no political bias, that political bias did not factor into the start of the probe." Now, remember, earlier we told you that they could find no bias, meaning it's neutral. The Washington Post is telling you they found no, that it did not factor into the probe. He, quote, "even turned up text messages of FBI agents hoping Trump would beat Hillary Clinton. In many ways, the IG report would have been disappointing to Trump, yet he gamely suggests it's even worse than he expected." The reality is that that is a very rosy reading of the truth, whereas Donald Trump's is a very positive spin for him. And We Are Libertarians is trying to bring you the information in the middle. Clearly not a deep state coup. I've never bought into that. I totally get, like, and I think a lot of libertarians are kind of seduced by, like, we hate the security agencies so much that libertarians are being seduced by Donald Trump's anti-security agency messaging. And so we're just kind of like, yes, daddy, do it harder. But it's not like... you have to remember his higher goal is not to actually reform or end these services. It's to basically, like, give himself more power. So you have to keep that in mind. But the media completely missing the point and not talking about the important thing, instead talking about Donald Trump, the important thing being that the FBI is abusing their power, as we have said that they probably would years ago when we talked about this.
Yeah, and it's funny listening to both sides on that. It's like they could have come together in a meeting of the minds and say, look, this is a real issue that we need to address on how we're treating the citizens of the United States. But that's not what they care about. They care about the power that has been sucked up into the executive branch of this government, knowing that that's, you know, that's the important thing, because so much of everybody's lives are now dictated by a lot of what's going on in Washington, where it shouldn't be, that they see that as the most important aspect of it. And you know, even Trump's trying to say that, I mean, there were a lot of people, including Trump, suggesting that there were going to be, Comey was going to be fired or arrested. And I guess the morning of the report that Biden had been arrested, but what you were seeing of him on the trail was old file footage. He was actually being arrested and they're trying to calm it down. I mean, the crazy stuff that I've seen is pretty amazing on both sides of the aisle. But the reality is that the real message is just once again ignored and lost in all of this, because everybody wants that power. If they get rid of the power, you know, they don't want to advocate that. They don't want to advocate for getting rid of the power because they just want to control it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, when Trump says he has a problem with the Fed and all the libertarians start going, oh yeah, end the Fed. He doesn't want to end the Fed. He wants more power over the Fed, right? To further abuse us.
Right. It's a half-assed attempt at reforming these things that are it's like the people who argue for the Constitutional Convention. It's like you idiots really want to open up the Constitution on a nationwide scale right now when the people are as socialistic and as greedy as they are now. The American heart is not where it was in 1791. And
but ironically, conservatives would yell about that because they'd be like, but the original spirit is like, you know what, bitch, we followed the Constitutional Convention. The original spirit means shit. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
The funniest part, too, is that it's like we should go for the convention. I'm like, if you can get everything you need to achieve a convention, you could already take over and change the government as it is anyway.
Right.
It's like, why go through try to gain that level of power when you could do everything you want with less than that, just influencing the current government?
Right.
I think that's just parties trying to find power. It's left or right trying to find power, and they're going to use the state to do so because they can't understand spreading an idea of liberty. And Chris, you touched on something I do want to go back to government, these. Or, you know, the FBI, the CIA, the deep state, and all these conspiracy theories. And I would say there's something to them, but I get what you're saying in the fact that we give them far too much credit. And just like these reports kind of lend weight to the fact that they're just really bad and they're not really out for a lot of political gain. It's not that they haven't worked, against certain chief executive officers of the government before, but they're not that put together. They just want to maintain their power. Like their world is not about taking Donald Trump down. They just really suck.
Right.
I don't think people understand that. They just want power. They already have it. Honestly, they hold a lot more power than the executive of the government, in my opinion. So it just goes to show you, not that they're out for Donald Trump, that they can do whatever the hell they want and you mean nothing to them.
Right.
And the media focusing on Trump too, that's not all the media's fault. That's a lot of it's Trump, because he will, unlike past presidents, he is just a Gatling gun of BS information on a daily basis. He's tweeting 70 to 80 times a day now with everything going on. There's so much
kind of
stuff
fun though, Dennis. It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun, but you gotta understand, like, it used to be the news cycle would be like something would happen on a Monday or Tuesday. Everybody would talk about it for a week or two, and then maybe something else would happen a couple weeks later. Now it's like something happens on Monday, everybody gets outraged, and by Wednesday there's three new things to be outraged about. And it's just like you can't catch your breath. And the media is just sucking on that because they can take that level of outrage and scandal and everything else that's going on from it, and they can build their opinion shows around it. Yeah. You remember when CNN got big when the Iraq war happened, right? And they were able to show 24/7 what's going on with the war. It was just a great thing. They got huge boost in ratings because of it. So everybody started watching, but as soon as the war was over and there was a lot going on, it was just like dead space for so long that then the 2000 election happens and 9/11 happens and everybody's just plastered to the 24/7 news cycles. And then the news starts to fade off again and then they start losing money. And so they need some way to keep people invested and watching 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Trump gives them that. He mm-hmm. gives them so much ammunition to work with that they, you know, they have to be loving it.
He's a media star.
I got to be honest, though, this is the worst series of impeachment out of the three. I thought this season of impeachment was just awful.
Season three. You don't think it should get renewed for a fourth season?
I think we don't have a choice. Season four will
there
be
there is no oral sex in the Oval Office. There's no blowjobs. I'm like, very disappointed in the lack of oral sex in this impeachment.
Like, even
I'm
going
to be honest with you.
Even in the impeachment prequel, the digital short that they aired, Ulysses S. Grant was riding his carriage too fast. Like, that's somewhat
Stop
interesting.
It.
Like, this is just some boring, like, financial
That is the
bullshit.
Whitest thing you've ever said in your life.
Digital short. All right, let's start wrapping up. Let's start giving final thoughts. Dennis, show Trisha how it's done in the final thoughts segment. Go ahead.
Final thoughts on this. The government is not good at doing things. I think that's the takeaway that nobody wants to hear, other than libertarians, most likely. But it's the one that should be out there as the headline, right? So I don't think anybody's going to learn from it, unfortunately. They're just going to try and take little pieces of what they can for their own little tribe, and then they can keep their power and move on. So we'll probably need a bunch more of these types of things to happen for people to finally start waking up to what's really going on. So, but hopefully maybe this is the first step. Maybe this is the first part of that process that we start getting to that point where people go, yeah. And the one thing about having Trump as president is people, I've been waiting since day one for people to say, look at how much power we gave the president, the executive branch. And now look what's being done with it. We need to make sure that nobody else can get in and abuse it this way. And I haven't seen anybody saying that, even from the left, right? It's like, that was my dream, was we would finally get the left to say, we need to pull back the power of the president. We give him too much. The Democrats just don't care, because they know that they're going to get back into office and they will still want that power. So they just think that the right person has to be in power. So we're not learning the lessons we need to learn, and nobody's holding anybody accountable, and it's just frustrating. And well, that's pretty much it. That's my level of disgust with what's going on.
All right, Trisha, final thoughts, and then feel free to self-promote if you wish.
Sweet. Yeah, so I kind of have the same thoughts that Dennis did a little bit about. This is more so, and I guess this is a libertarian take.
See, listen, people, BC's caucus and Reinhold coming together here on the program.
Yes.
See how much you people in common.
I love Dennis.
Quit fighting.
He's actually really... Dennis is really well-read. I really respect his opinion, and it comes from an honest place, so why would I fight with him? But I'm very pragmatic, which I will not... I'll be called a fake anarchist tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But anyways, talking about, you know, these agencies in the government, and a lot of people think, oh, they're out for this person or that person. No, they're just bad. And like Dennis was saying, don't worry about your team, because your team could be in power today and you could use that government against somebody else. And then you could be the person out of power and they could use it against you. The problem being that they even have that power in the first place. So maybe don't use a giant collective force to control other people. Just spread the ideas of liberty. Fuck the feds, fuck the FBI, fuck the CIA, and fuck the deep state.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, yes. And so I did take a little... Thank you, Chris. Are you going to bleep that out?
No.
This is a show for adults.
No, we don't. I may censor the C word. I feel bad about calling her the C word, but okay. I typically don't edit.
That's on you.
Yeah, that was me.
But no, I did take a little bit of a break, had huge life changes, kind of went back to school, changed my job, career, got engaged. Like you said, I moved. But I am back into wanting to do my show again. And I have so many guests lined up that I had put off, got a new studio set up, which isn't completely in the background yet tonight. So I am so excited to bring you that stuff and bring you a little bit of anarchy on the We Are Libertarians podcast network. And so you can follow me, Trisha. I'm Trish Arkey right now on Facebook.
Trish Arkey.
I did that just because of some job stuff, but soon that will go back to my name. Ginger Arkey, you can follow me on Facebook, Trisha.Stewart, Instagram, Trish Arkey. And then if you just want to go to We Are Libertarians, you can find me links there. Also some other awesome shows. So get ready for more fun and more shenanigans.
All right, very good. I want to thank Sam Schultz for the great show notes, which you can find at WeAreLibertarians.com or in the description of this. I was remiss in thanking him at the very beginning, but we want to make sure that we get that in. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate you so much, and we appreciate you listening to We Are Libertarians. It is our traditional couple weeks off. I get 2 weeks off in Christmas time, and I just take the time off, and I don't. I won't be back until the first week of January the 7th, and I just try to recharge a little bit. I'm going to be working on some special projects so I don't get too bored. But we will be off the next couple weeks, and we hope that you won't miss us too much. Maybe you'll get caught up on some past episodes. Tons of great stuff in the archives for you to listen to. These shows are long enough that I'm sure you're like, I should go back and re-listen to that World War I episode, which is actually probably my top three favorite. I was really proud of it.
Actually, it was good. I've listened to it.
Thank you. Yeah. So thank you for listening. We hope that you have a great Christmas. We say Merry Christmas around here. We're saying it again, Tricia.
Merry Christmas.
That's right. Thank you, Donald Trump, for bringing back Christmas. Well,
yeah, because Obama stole Christmas from me. Like, I didn't even know how to celebrate it until he was gone.
So happy Hanukkah to our friends. Happy Kwanzaa. Should we have any Kwanzonians listening? I don't know if that's a thing, but
it is now.
Thank you to our Jewish friends, and I think I said Hanukkah. But thank you to everyone. Hope that you have a Hody. Yes, happy Mormon Christmas to Hody.
Happy, I don't know what the hell to think, to my agnostic friends.
Happy nothing to our Jewish Jehovah's Witnesses. If you're a 16th century Puritan, you will please don't put anyone in jail for celebrating.
Yes.
So I think we've covered all the bases, to be honest. But Merry Christmas to you all. Hope you have a happy new year. You know, maybe we probably, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to take the 2 weeks off, but we probably should like work on a show covering the past decade. I may go back through kind of the show titles and kind of look at what we talked about. Like, what are some of the significant things? This is the end of a decade, man. We're going into 2020. So can you believe it?
I'm going to be 29 this year. It's crazy.
That's amazing. That's the third decade that you'll be 29. Just kidding. Wow. All right. So
we have to have the millennium argument again, though.
Please download Gingerarchy before I have to remove it from the website because she's quit the network. Reinhold just completely missed what I just did, or he was trying to gracefully move on.
He was being graceful because he's married and he knows the wrath.
Well, I'm divorced and I don't know any better.
Oh, yes, you do. I won't say anything now. Well, I'm nice. Trisha, I'm nicer than you are.
Trisha is a beautiful, beautiful 29-year-old woman, and I don't care what
anyone says. Thank you, Christopher.
Congratulations on your engagement. We are happy for you. We know there are many boys out there mourning the loss of your singledom.
Well, you can still listen to my show, and I'm really excited, and I missed Wall, and I'm happy to be back.
Good.
In a new space. So.
Yes, and it's beautiful, and I love the flag in the back. What is that?
I have much more. This is the anarcho-capitalist flag.
Oh, I thought that was like one of those holiday movie fake kingdom flags.
Right, it's that as well.
Acadopia.
I do have some books that will, and then I have a large painting over here, and
please tell me that it's Ludwig von Mises in a bikini. Like what?
It is not. Mises was such a minarchist. Anyways, we'll get into that on Gingerarchy.
Mises is now too
kind of a statist.
For fuck's sake! I can't keep up with you people. I don't even care. I'm not even going to ask any more questions. Like, just tell me who I'm supposed to hate and who I'm supposed to like to be a real libertarian.
Oh, that's easy. I'll make a list.
All right, thank you. All right, thanks for joining us. We will see you in 2020. And thank you, everyone. Is that Charlie Chaplin?
Indeed, he's an anarchist.
All right. If you get a chance, watch The Great Dictator. It's a great movie. All right, thanks. Have a great time with your family, and we will have a great time with ours, and we will see you in the next decade.